strike, propose an adoption of the minutes. Any seconder? That is mostly seconded. We are done with the minutes. Thank you so much. The next point in the agenda is committee program for second term. I'll give one of the staff, I'm suspecting it's the conduct advisor, to take us through with immediate effect. Deboho?
Good morning, Honourable Members and my guests. Chair, as we have indicated in previous times with regard to the parliamentary program, the new priorities for the second quarter have been issued by the MA. MENCO is yet to meet and deliberate on what are the proposed changes and so on and deliberate on that. So that meeting will take place. But just to take members into confidence is that these new changes are expected to be submitted by the end of this week to the House Chairperson. And changes are not so big. It's just to indicate that priorities that have been indicated there include the committee's work with regard to in relation to its work with other intergovernmental partners. The joint meeting is one of the priorities, but also on that it's about ensuring that the committee's strategic 5-year plan is drawn so that the budget can be allocated. As previously discussed, the Parliament is moving towards the direction of having a zero-based budget. So activities that the committees would plan would also would have to match the budget that is allocated. So one of the priorities is that at some point in time, in a month from now, the committee would have to adopt a 5-year strategic plan that will mirror the plans that the committee intends to advance. But just to take us back to, you know, the program that we had, there's a one pager that I'm sure all members have received, which indicates the next meeting. You'd recall that the next quarter starts on the 12th of August, and it's that week where we will be having Women's Parliament. So that week for the committee, I don't think there will be a meeting, but our first meeting into the second quarter will be on the 19th, where we have envisaged to have SAFA. This was the previously adopted program. Now, changes that would occur there perhaps would include us actually including here, over and above this meeting, a strategic workshop. Perhaps towards the end of that members should give us a direction as to when should that be anticipated. But most likely towards the end of August, beginning of September. That 2-day workshop should take place. On the side of staff administration, we have been busy with preparations and so on, whatever that is expected out of that. That we'll share with MENCO, which will then put before the committee perhaps the first time we meet in the next quarter. But MENCO would look at the documents that have been prepared in preparation towards the subject. So the program as it is running until the 22nd of September might change slightly, perhaps on one or two meetings where we would have to bring the joint meetings, particularly where we've seen that there's been a call to accelerate fiscal education. So perhaps having basic education in that particular meeting in line with the priorities of the National Assembly Program Planning Committee would be one of the, might be one of the changes that we'd have to make. But as it is, this program still reflects the priorities that are there with those anticipated changes. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Debo. Any intake? Like I wanted that we must agree on a proposed date or not a date of the month. I'm happy when he's saying that the men come and sit in order that when we're coming to the committee, we must come with a fully understanding which we are going to discuss with the our staff. But I'm suspecting that end of August or mid-August, we're supposed to have our strike plan. And I hear you talking about, we said there are two departments that we want to see. You mentioned basic education. I'm suspecting no health because of what the department on the strategy on the PP that they've told us that the we must support themselves on this thing of tobacco what? Banning of alcohol and tobacco. We are suspecting that we need that. We know that what we've said about basic education. In a way, I'm suspecting that it's very urgent. I can tell you others, they are thinking that all is well, but you were, I'm suspecting that when I was having one-on-one, that no, we can't come and raise that thing if it was sorted, it was not. I want to call you on the information that we have got, appreciating Dr. Malazi, we are on the floor. Honorable members, in our last meetings, we didn't call Usoli Malazi. We called him Masoka, ne? Sishoka. Yeah, Sishoka. Now he's officially Malazi. Take note of that, honorable members. Honorable Malazi.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just think one input would be, given the deliberations we've had, I think one department that we seriously need to meet is the Department of Cooperative Governance. Given our frustrations with the MIG allocation, most of our sports facilities, so I would suggest that we add that to the list of departments that we should see in this quarter. And also, if there's time, I think there's also hope that we get a proper briefing and interaction with folks in South Africa. Because one, they were unable to appear for the committee. They made written submissions, which isn't the best way to start cooperation. But I also think, given the administrative issues there, it's quite important that we meet with them as one of our first order of business.
Well, I see that we got a serious challenge in terms of how we are going to meet with all of these partners also continue with the program. Mm-hmm. With the program. Because as it stands, I mean, just glancing through the one page that you have given us already takes us up to September, and we have just met about three main federations or three main organizations, which is SAFA, SASCOC, and Athletic South Africa. So I'm thinking aloud as to how we can fast track this work. One issue which is quite key is the point that the chairperson has raised. Issues around cross-cutting issues like the tobacco, alcohol, banning, that thing that is currently circulating, and basic education, particularly around whether school sport is compulsory, because we get the sense that curriculum does provide for physical education,
but to what extent we are not sure. But we might have Chairperson to interact with the committees before we even move towards the moving with department. So my concrete proposal is that the chair should interact formally with both the chairperson of basic education as well as the chairperson of health, so that we can begin understanding. And if possible, so something that we might have to do is to ensure that we should have subcommittees. I'm not sure whether we are ready to do that, so that we can portray some of the work that we are supposed to do, because the way it is, I'm worried whether we'll even begin dealing with key issues that we are supposed to deal with. The whole issue of transformation, which it is something that we need to begin saying, what are the indicators that we have been given by various federations? Are they meeting those targets that they have given us or not? So I'm worried that we've got a lot of work, but I'm proposing that particularly the departments that we've got portfolio committees, that we should try to ensure that we meet with portfolio committees before we go to the actual department, because we might have a problem if we have not interacted with the committees. Thank you, Chair.
Before I give you Honourable Manana and Honourable Bergman, I'm suspecting that I'm not worried, because as Mencom, we have a lot to do. What we are contributing on will take care. Remember that budget votes did take all our time, and we've met once as Mencom. So what Honorable Strike is saying, it's our duty as Mencom that as soon as possible, we must take whatever you are contributing today to make sure that we make time, that if it means that every week we must, but provided that in the Mencom will be sitting and coming to the committee with the proposals. Like as I'm sitting here, we try to call Boxing South Africa. They've written a memo apologizing that they will meet us. They've already indicated that they will meet us towards September, and they've say why are they doing that. But sometimes we need all of us to whip these people who have so much money that we want to help them to come and tell us in order that, for instance, the question of the meat is very, very crucial. And if as this committee they want us to go to the provinces without meeting them, it cannot be right, but they cannot keep us at ransom. We need to move. You know, this question of e-transformation, it means people that they cannot rest until they see what is going on. We have about 72 or 75federations. If we can wait from themselves, they will fail us. So we try to be very, very pleading to themselves. If we are calling them, they must not think that we do know. We don't know anything. But through the presentation of the department, we are seeing that something needs to be monitored. And our oversight is not to grill people. It's we want to understand what has been doing to this committee since 20 years. So we are here, we don't want to hear about information, but former chairperson, former members want it from horse's mouth in order that we must do justice. So sometimes others, they are thinking that when we are calling them, we have an information, we can't get information on the street or on the papers. We need people to come and brief this new committee. We will remain new. So, Honorable Manana, and followed by Honorable Bergman.
Thanks, Chairperson. I wanted to add what Honorable Chairperson said already. Chairperson, if I look at this department we need to call, I can even add the social development. Since they are our stakeholders. They've got those games for the old age, and they don't have any budget, but they take the budget from our department, same like the education. They are having the school sports and they don't fund that school sports. They come to our department. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The first thing is with regards to what our whip is saying, our colleague Honorable Ralph Homer is saying. In terms of the two, in terms of having subcommittees, I'm worried that as a new committee, we need to try and understand as much as possible very quickly. What we maybe should see as innovation is maybe having another day, like let's say a Wednesday, because Tuesday we're usually limited to the morning, and there's going to be a plenary, so you've got a window period in which you can meet, you can't go over time. If you take a free day like a Wednesday, we've got the whole day. Now, we mustn't be scared to have 2 days of this for the first few weeks or months or whatever the case may be because of the priority in which we're dealing with. The second one concerns me more, much more. As my colleague has said with regards to Boxing SA, we've got a problem here. And already before there was any suspensions or anything, there's already a lack of accounting to this committee. Now, they write to you and they tell you when they're going to come and present. After you've requested that they come and present you. Yes, I'm sure the excuse in the letter was that they need to get all their ducks in a row, that they're busy fixing, you know, there's all people taking up new positions. That's not the case. In this committee, if you call one of these bodies to come and account, they come and account to you. They don't tell you when they feel it's more, when they feel that they're going to come in and account. As my colleague says, we had a budget speech where we spoke about a committee based on paper and not based on presentation. So I would urge you, Chair, I would urge you to please rewrite a letter and inform them that they will be presenting to us at the date that you give them. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. From our colleague, Honorable Ralakuma, it seems he's having a problem of time, and somehow you can agree with him because this lot of things need to be squeezed somewhere. But I'm suggesting to this committee that there are three key ones that we cannot leave out, even if we say in time. That will be meeting with basic education, because if you meet with SAFA and other federations without dealing with this issue of basic education, you'll be losing it, because basic education is where the government is starting. And again, our engagement with SALGA should be taken further, because we want to know where this big money is going if we don't see it in the majority of the rural communities. We don't see anything there. And the SAFA, Boxing South Africa also, we must meet them. Then I don't see an oversight plan here, because we also have to go out and see if things are happening on the ground. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. I'm noting, and the relevant people who must take minutes are doing so. This letter of Boxing South Africa surprises me, and they wrote to me as a chairperson, because I've taken an initiative to our discussion as a committee that we want the present visitors to come to us. You have said also we want Boxing South Africa. And with the SALGA in basic education, it was clear. And as I'm saying that, if Imencom doesn't have any problem, maybe by Tuesday we must meet, but I'll take care of that arrangement. Because I've seen really that we cannot do the oversight if it's not planned and on paper. So we are not yet done that, and they are capable that in the Menco I do sit as a chairperson and the whip, and we are taking that we are saying is very urgent. Maybe this thing of meeting one-on-one with its chairpersons, we are going for a recess, but I don't think that we cannot plan accordingly, that we need this basic education, USALGA, and then Boxing South Africa with others that we have noted when we were discussing that we want them with immediate effect. For instance, we suppose on the 26th as a committee to visit somewhere that they were having their Christmas day, so we couldn't go there. So the agency of the MENCOM, honorable staff, you need to remain behind with us in order that if it comes that we must not go home, we can't go home without having plans. What are we going to do at this summit? I've taken all what we are saying, honorable members, and it's in order. Thank you. You want to say something? Okay.
Just, Chair, as a last thing, in response to the oversight and extra meetings and so on, I think if members can check the MA program, you'd realize that in the second quarter, there are plenaries Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday until the end of the term. And so it will not be possible for any oversight to take place, let alone any external meeting that the health chair would approve. And so the question of extra meetings, the day that is only possible that we can look at is a Friday, which is a possibility that we can look at as an extra day, but also that we'll need the approval of the health chair. But as staff and an administration, I think we look into that.
Thank you. We take care of what he is saying, but it's right that he must indicate in the committee in order that when we are going for a plan, we must know the problems that we'll be facing when we're coming back on because of the NA problem. Let me take this opportunity to say that we do have visitors, that they are not, this is not the first time that they visited us. We have guests from National Lotteries Board, the delegation from there. We have Prof. Alfred Nivutanda. I don't know how to pronounce, but you will pardon me. Professor? This is Professor. And then the second name is Thabang Mapane, Chief Executive Officer, OPN. Thank you, sir. And then number three, Mr. Jeffrey Dupris, Senior Executive Grant Funding. Oh, who alone am done? Okay.
Perfect.
Number four, Edwin Mula, Chairperson Sport and Culture Disputing Agents. Is he coming? What is the apology? Can't say that he's not here. We want an official apology because it's written in my list of visitors. You are going to do that when I'm giving you a platform. Thank you. Now this is your opportunity to talk to this committee. After you came and presented, we read your budget, and we wanted now, since that it was 18th of February, today is this day, take us through. Need everything, your plans, and we've scrutinized, your through the research and advice scrutinize your summary of sport and recreation distribution agent funding. So as I was saying that some of your colleagues, they felt offended when we're calling them because we want go and work with facts, not hearing from former parliamentarians or former chairpersons. So anytime we're calling you, you must know that you are genuine. We want the story and the information from horse's mouth. Take us through. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. and then we do the tendering again, or we invite bidders to operate. So this is the third license that we are going into. The first one was Utingo, which then up to 2006 or 2005, and then the second one, which is a current operator, is Kidani. Its license is coming to an end next year around May, June. So therefore, according to the Act, we are supposed to appoint a new or the old operator. We are busy adjudicating the tender, and in fact, I must present my apology because of this meeting, we had to stop the adjudication, which is the minister wants the decision by tomorrow. So I just negotiated with board members to come at half past four so that we can knock off at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, because the decision by the department is that we must submit tomorrow. We, as I said, the board is made up of seven members. Six members are have been selected by Parliament, and the seventh member is the nominee of the Minister of Trade and Industry. We have got the minister there, the board, the distributing agencies, EFCO Risk Committee, MENCO, IDANI, which is an operator. Then we have got divisions and departments within our organization. The NLB, which is National Lottery Board, its work is divided into two areas. The first one is to regulate the lottery operations. You will agree with me that the new dispensation came at a time when there was only a provincial lottery, and this was in KwaZulu-Natal. Others were trying to put some schemes to make money, but the new dispensation after 1994, then they established what we call a national, in other words, there can't be any other lottery. If there are other schemes like SMS where you just get an information to say you have €1-2 million, you have £1-2 million, £18 million. Those are the schemes that we regulate. In other words, we try to enforce regulations to say they must not exist. We do this by making sure that we talk to the public, we go to the media to tell them that there is only one national lottery. National lottery is different from gambling, which is a casino and many other forms, horse racing and whatever. So this one is defined as a game of chance. In other words, if you win, you might be one winner out of so many people that have played. So worldwide, that's the understanding why National Lottery is created. We, apart from regulating the industry, we also do what we call disbursement. In other words, we collect money from the national operator and put the money into the trust. The government has registered a trust which is called National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund, NLDTF. pays all the money that we get from the operator. While collecting the money, we again distribute them according to what is enacted in the Act. The Act identifies sectors in the whole public that can be funded. So we don't just fund any other request. It has to be within the sectors. The sector number one is charitable organizations. These are the home-based care group, HIV and AIDS group, old age group, those people who are doing, the NGOs who are doing gardening, who are doing, you know, looking after the elderly and preschool children and the like. Those are charitable organizations. They receive 45% of the budget. In other words, if we are saying this year we are distributing 2 billion, 45% of 2 billion goes to charitable organizations. Then the second group is art, culture, national heritage, and environment. That one receives 28%. These are the organizations that are looking after our heritages, our culture, the languages, greening of towns and areas, music, drama, dance, and all cultural aspects. It is supported by 28%. Sports, which is your section, receives 22% of the budget. I think the grant funding will explain to you. And then there is a miscellaneous sector. The Act decided to put a miscellaneous sector at 5% because the Act saw it fit that there could be a project that is not sport related or art related or charity related. It may be a combination of three sectors: charity, sport, and the arts. So this sector, this money is not a big budget. It is mainly for such sector. In other words, the committee that decides on this sector has to satisfy itself that the application warrants their hearing. Or if the project, if say for example is a sport project, it comes when there is no window for application. If the sport has closed the application, then there is an urgent application that says, okay, the country is going to host the World Cup, or the country is going to host 10 tournaments or whatever. So that group can motivate why the application is so urgent, and then the committee can sit down and look at the agency and adjudicate the application. I must indicate, Chairperson, that the reason why you see the percentages here is not our own making. It is the Parliament that decided on this percentage. So ours is to implement what is the vision. I know in the sports sector there has been a very there was a big lobbying to say the percentage must be changed. But well, I think I'm talking to the lawmakers. A law cannot be changed understand the slides. Even myself, I can feel that when you look at sports in the country, you would even think of changing the 22% to 30% or 40% sometimes. But who am I? The lawmakers decided, and I must indicate that the act has gone through parliament sessions to be amended. It was passed last year, December. The president has signed it. The percentage is still the same. So it means we have tried to talk, but the lawmakers said we are fine with 22%, 28%, 45%, and 5%. And that is something that will carry us until another act comes into operation. So I'm just saying this to the honorable members. It is not from the NLB, it is from the lawmakers. We are implementing what the lawmakers have agreed upon. The other thing that I must indicate is that these three sectors, the charity sector, has a distributing agency. In other words, a distributing agency is a committee that has been appointed by the minister. It's not appointed by the board. It is appointed by the minister. The appointment is based on the skill. If people have got skill, they can nominate people to serve in the distributing agency of charities, arts, sports, well, miscellaneous is adjudicated by the board itself. So this distributing agency, in terms of the old act, we are facing it out now, because I think the minister is going to gazette regulations to make the act to start to operate now around September this year. These people are part-time. You get a professor from the university, you get whatever person who knows how to deal with non-governmental organizations, NGOs, the trust and the like. You put them as a committee and they are accountable to the minister, not to the board. The board becomes the trustee of the fund. In other words, we collect the fund and put it in a trust, and the minister goes, according to the head, goes and appoints somebody to come and distribute that fund according to percentages. So the new act, which is kicking in very soon now, it is making these people, the distributing agencies, full-time. In other words, still the minister will appoint them, but they will come to the NLB and work full-time in the NLB, reporting to the minister, but accountable to the commission or the board. So I think that is something that has changed drastically. At least the board and the commissioner will have authority to tell them that yes, in province X there is a lot of poverty. Please make sure that you adjudicate the applications expeditiously. But this time they only come sometimes twice per month or once per month. It is out of our control. We can only invite them and give them accommodation. I think I must hand over to the CEO. who will take you through on the whole presentation. So I hope, honorable members, you understand now that you have got a distributing agency solely for sport. Before I hand this to the CEO, according to this, the Act, or the way in which the sports distributing agency was nominated, usually you will find federations or big organizations like SASCO sending maybe 4 or 5 members. That's why around last year or before last year, there was a lot of problem because 6 members will be conflicted and only 4 members are not conflicted. If it is an application that comes from a federation or from a SASCO, so they can adjudicate. But I think the Department of Trade and the Industry is trying to stop people who are having vested interest. In other words, you cannot serve in the distributing agency if you are running an NGO that is also aiming to get funds from lotteries. You have to refrain from being nominated. So I hope they will appoint people who are not conflicted and who can do justice to the whole distribution of the monies. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. I'm suspecting that you are noting or giving to the CMO. Ne? Okay. You are noting the members, the first input. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. thank you, Chair. Honorable members, I was just about to whisper to my chairperson that earlier on, Honorable Chair, you wanted to know what was happening to Mr. Mola. I don't know.
Chairperson, Mr. Mola, as the chairperson, either the distributing agency has got the chairperson and deputy chairperson. So Ms. Anmuda is the chairperson, the deputy chairperson is Harold, Dr. Harold Adams. I think all of them are in Glasgow. They are supporting our Team South Africa in Glasgow. So when they come back, I will inform them that, in fact, ourselves, myself, CEO, and grant funding, we seem to be neutral because we serve all the departments, but they are solely appointed to the sport and the recreation. So it is their work. So they are not here today. We tried to phone them. We couldn't get them, but because the CEO and grant funding, they are there, they are full time, so they can come as and when you need an information.
Thank
I tell them their
you.
Apology.
Thank you. In future, we need written apologies, not verbal apologies. I know that maybe it's important. We're doing well. Every night I watch the Glasgow. Things happening there. South Africa is trying its best. I've seen even honorable members, the netball there is doing well. Somebody sent a memo when I was in the plenary saying that please read this number 7. Number 7 is JK of e netball. So I'm suspecting this. Honorable members, they won't even know now my name. They will call me GK. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I'll just take you through our strategic overview, and the purpose of the slide is just to link the information that the Chairperson has already presented to you. That based on all the information that the Chair shared with you, and the fact that we operate as per the Lotteries Act, what we did then as the administration of the National Lotteries Board was to develop a strategic overview and for purposes of reporting as it is required by legislation. The vision of the National Lotteries Board is to be a catalyst for social upliftment, and later when the Grant Funding Executive gives a presentation, you will see how we actually try to distill that into every work that we are doing, and that our mission is to regulate all lotteries and sports pools with integrity and ensure the protection of all participants. So the Chairperson spoke to you about the regulatory responsibility or mandate of the organization, which is an important part for the National Lotteries Board, because that is where we manage to generate revenue that is not only running the organization, but that gets distributed to good causes. And that we maximize revenue for good causes in a responsible manner. And we do that through monitoring the activities of the operator. We make sure that the operator performs as per what they have promised in the license, so that we don't find a situation where we are running short of revenue or we are unable to distribute funds to the needy, and that we distribute funds equitably and expeditiously. For this current financial year, our strategic objectives, as approved by the board, firstly, to enhance administration, ensure compliance with applicable legislation and policy prescripts. The second one is to establish and maintain strategic partnerships with key stakeholders. The third one is to implement relevant initiatives geared towards ensuring compliance by the society and illegal lotteries with the Act. And the fourth one is for fair and equitable allocation of grants in line with legislation, and basically it's in line with the percentages that the Chair would have shared with you earlier on. Now, the latter part of the slide was just to share with the committee that for our reporting department, this is our promise of performance of how we are aligning our strategy and activities with the Department of Trade and Industry, and we have identified three areas, one being the National Development Plan, that we hope that through the distribution of funds will bring about faster economic growth and higher investment and greater labor absorption. It's just that this is the sports committee. We could be talking to you about how we play that role in terms of ensuring that we identify or have signed an MOU with one of the NGOs that is looking after unemployed graduates. And to that end, we've been able to place close to 1,000 unemployed graduates with NGOs who are our beneficiaries. So as we are distributing funds, you know, as part of capacity building, we are also helping those beneficiaries to have capacity, and we give that by getting these unemployed graduates, we take them through for further training, and then we place them with all those beneficiaries. And also building a capable and developmental state. This talks to the impact that we would like our funding to have, hence the study that has been commissioned to try and determine whether the 18 billion rand that has been distributed to date has made an impact in the lives of ordinary South Africans or not. And surely, after analyzing the results of that study, we should be able to come up with new initiatives. I think what the Chairperson forgot to tell you about the new Act as well is that much as our funding is application-based, the new legislation is creating an opportunity for us to go into proactive funding, whereby, especially in those rural areas where people are battling, look, we've gone through a process of trying to capacitate people.
Durango shops, we call them, we try to make sure that they have access to funding. But fact of the matter is, it can be quite tough and challenging. So the new legislation is actually giving us an opportunity to conduct research, to come back and recommend to the board, and for certain areas to be funded proactively. The other one is to facilitate transformation of the economy to promote industrial development, investment competitiveness, and employment creation. And the last one, on IPEB, really, most of the part there has been done by the board with the process of licensing the third operator, because it is about all the technology that those operators are bringing into the country and how that is going to benefit South Africans. This is a slide that elaborates, I think, what the chairperson has said already. I will not repeat that in terms of how we are operating in grant funding. I would like to hand over to the senior executive of grant funding so that we can start to discuss real issues that brought us here about how we fund in sports and, you know, how we actually monitoring activities in that area. I couldn't resist being happy as the chairperson was talking about what's happening with the Commonwealth Games, because whenever that happens, you know, as an organization, it gives us such a lot of fulfillment to know the role we have played to make sure that that team goes to Glasgow and represents the country. Thank you. Over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. The next slide, I think the Chairperson have actually talked about it, in just in terms of the different role players. I think the Chairperson outlined the committee that's appointed by the Minister, and then the division that I'm heading is basically providing administrative support to the committee in terms of the work preparing the application and also post adjudication, getting the documentation out and so forth. So this is what the slide was talking about. And the fact that I think it was also mentioned by the CEO now, that currently we're working on a 100% application-based process. The distributing agency usually periodically reflect, and before they go on a call of application, they would then say, what is it, what we want to achieve. So the couple of slides that's following now is basically the kind of framework and work that was done before the last call that was made in 2012. And I think the slide is basically outlining, in a sense, from a strategic point of view, because the sports and recreation sector, it covers quite a big strata in from recreational level, where you just encourage participation to the high end in terms of what we're seeing happening currently at the Commonwealth, where you start basically supporting your elite athletes and also in terms of just pushing the national teams to perform on the international level. So the scope is quite broad in terms of the categories of what is being funded and so forth, and I'll talk later on in the slide to just indicate some of the sub-sectors, you know, going from schools to national federations to the national body, SASPOT itself. And obviously, I think the Chairperson earlier in the meeting talked about transformation and so forth. So part of the imperative right through of the work that the committee is doing, the distributing agency of sport, is obviously trying to balance that. So whilst you're funding and you want to promote excellence, you also need to at the same time say, how do I also use the funding and leverage that so that I can also encourage that part of bringing in leveling up the playing fields for those that have been historically disadvantaged. As I indicated, under the transformation and development programs, that will be part of what, or the bouquet of different things that could be funded. So as I said, as part of that, it is about talent identification. In schools, especially, a number of schools are being funded just for basic facilities, so that they just basically, and a lot of that would, for example, include just multi-purpose facilities where you can play netball, volleyball, and so forth. Obviously, given later on, if we talk about the amounts, you one would ideally would have maybe funded a more substantive and a more comprehensive facility. But obviously now, because of the demand and the number of applicants versus what is in the Kiki, you know, the case sometimes is a little bit spread thin. So it means that you individual allocations to specific applicants, you have to balance that with, you know, impact versus how do I make sure everybody got some kind of access and some benefit from this. And so the equipment, again, from schools level to universities to national federations, where they would start looking at very specialized equipment. For example, I remember in the Free State, at the university there, they would have funded at some stage Olympic standard swimming pool. But part of the conditions, a lot of that, we could then find sometimes when there's national camps. The same, for example, happened with the High Performance Center at the University of Pretoria, where there's funding going in, but one of the conditions would be that that facility or the use of that equipment needs to be accessible, for example, to our junior teams when they go into national camps and so forth, just to try again, as I said, to leverage that so it doesn't become a very limited use and benefit for the applicant itself. As I said, I think the capacity building, so just an additional note. So part of the funding would also be directed to, for example, coaching of technical officials, administrative courses, etc., just to build up the capacity at the local, but also the mid-level in terms of just facilitating better administration to our different officials, coaches, administrators, etc. Continuing, obviously, on that part, as I said, it also goes to international accreditation of coaches, translation of course material, facilitation of technical courses, etc. I've indicated in terms of high performance, there's sport-specific research equipment, medical nutrition, and then obviously the international participation, of which Commonwealth is just one. It's, I mean, Olympics and it's world championships and all those kind of different platforms that the agency is trying to support, obviously with the limited resources. Then just briefly, Chairperson, we are talking about the current dispensation, so the Chairperson has alluded to the fact that within the next couple of months we will see new regulations coming up which will replace this, but this is basically the last regulations was July 2010 published, and currently it basically prescribe in a sense that for any application to be considered, there needs to be that minimum requirements. And the list, I'm not going through the full list, but it basically consists of, you know, a mandatory application form. There's certain mandatory documents that needs to be submitted, like proof of registration. With sports, for example, we had a little bit of a debate because a lot of our sports clubs themselves, unlike in the charity sector, they are not registered with, for example, Department of Social Development with the NPO certificate. But what the sports sector is doing, obviously, they got a more structured sector because they then use the affiliation structure whereby the clubs belong to districts, associations, regional, and provincial. So part of the assurance that they are getting is obviously that that particular football club or rugby club is belonging to those particular structures, that for some kind of comfort in terms of legitimacy of that particular application. And then obviously, as part of the application process, you want to ensure good governance, so you will be looking at the issues of whether the finances are being looked after and the money is not going to somebody's pocket and so forth. So that's part of the logic of asking for financial statements and just looking at whether there's accountability in terms of how that particular institution is using its funds. Chairperson, I'm not going through the detail of this. What the next couple of slides is just trying to indicate to you is that although you've got a bouquet of different funding pockets or envelopes, what the agency usually does when it goes out on a call for application, it will be very specific to say for the different categories of applicants, starting, for example, with national federations, up to your schools or to your clubs. They will then, based on the needs and obviously alignment with some of the strategic documents, like for example in terms of looking at what Department of Sport is saying in terms of what is the priorities, they would then in a sense dictate to say that if you are a national federation, for this particular call, you can apply for 1, 2, 3. A school, you can apply for basic facilities, basic equipment, and so forth. So this is what this the next couple of slides are basically outlining, just to indicate with the last call of application, this would have been the kind of structure that has been used to just give guidelines to applicants, because obviously, as members would appreciate, you've got potentially thousands of applicants out there. And so if you don't, in a sense, say that for this category of applicant, I'm looking for the following kind of things to possibly fund, you might obviously, already it's already the situation where you get obviously demand for that application is far exceeding manifold the available budget for that fiscal year. So I think part of the logic of this doing this is just to say for the different of categories of applicants, there's different needs, there's different priorities. So the agency will then signal up front to say you can apply for the following things. As I said, like schools, for example, you can then they can basically it's about basic facilities, either new or upgrading, sports equipment and your normal kit, whether it's for your tennis team or whether it's for your soccer team or rugby team, you can just basically apply for basic facilities, the same for clubs. And obviously, there's also support going to the academies of sport. The municipalities itself, usually it's around facilities. And one of the things that the agency is trying to do is to get the municipality to at least commit to then the maintenance of their particular facilities, because obviously, the agency would just fund, you say you want to upgrade the stadium or you would like to put a tartan track in, but at the end of the day, that investment will be basically fruitless if there's not some kind of agreement to say that once that capital layout has happened, somebody needs to say that, okay, I will then, for moving forward, make sure that that facility is upgraded. So we try to, as part of the funding, the agency is actually trying to commit, get commitment from the municipalities to say that they will chip in terms of looking after the facility and should make sure that it's actually kept in a reasonable condition. I've talked about universities and also obviously part of the tertiary institutions, there's also funding going to the further education and training institutions. What the agency has started to try and pilot with the last call is to, because of this problem, that you get a school that applies maybe for 20 million rand, they started to categorize and started to put some kind of indication of the different amounts that they would be looking at as a standard. There's obviously ups and positives and negatives about this. On the positive side, you try to limit the expectations, but potentially on the negative side, it might kind of work against your intent maybe to be more strategically focused in enhancing impact. For example, you might get a very good project that can have a big impact. Now, if you kind of limit that thing to a certain amount, you limit yourself to be able to make impact. So I think that's part of the ongoing debate. It's really about juggling and balancing to say you want to have equitable access, spreading the cake a little bit broad as possible, but how do you do that so that it doesn't become so thin that actually you don't see the benefit coming back because you are funding such small amounts that you can't actually make a visible impact in terms of what that particular project is in position to. And I think that's one of the challenges that we will have to think and discuss and put our heads together continuously. Chairperson, just as an illustration of what I was talking about earlier, this slide is just showing the applications that we received with the previous call. Now, if you take into account you have on average about 400 million or so available, you could see for that call, if we had to fund everything that people have asked for, we would have needed 6.5 billion rand. And that already shows you the challenge that there is, and that's why it is almost inevitable that you would always have people that is not happy, because from there it is clear that somebody is going to be disappointed out of that process. Either you're not going to get, or you're going to get part of what you've asked for to be able to balance that. And I think this is kind of showing one of our biggest challenges, because the funds is kind of the income side is kind of stable over the last couple of years, but on the demand side, it is actually gone up quite tremendously. And I think that's one of the things that the agency have to juggle all the time. Yes, I think that's basically what I was trying to indicate. So in that year, the budget was 537 million, and you had the demand, or you had the ask from all those organizations for 6.5 billion. So you could only, out of that amount, you could only deal with 537 million. Jefferson, part of what we're doing when we go out on corporate applications, we have usually this workshop that we're having in all the provinces, just to make sure people understand and so forth. And the last time we had charities and sports going out at the same time, so this is just to reflect to you that we, out of that workshop, about 90 of them we've done over that period of time, with about 7,700 people attending. And we also had then started with help desk. So besides the workshops, we would have target provinces where we struggled usually to get the right number of applications, like your Northern States and Free States and so forth. We would then focus and maybe deploy some of our officials there for a week just to give further assistance to people. And this is just a report of the breakdown of that 7,722 people. So we would have covered that number of workshops in the various provinces. Just in terms of the amounts, the allocations over the last 3 years, basically it was 389, and then went up to 523. We are back, 2013-14, we are kind of back to, we were back to 483. Jefferson, you can see on average, we were looking about around 500 million, give and take, just for the sports, obviously the sports, and that's basically the 22% that the chairperson has referred to in terms of the cap of the total budget. If I can then move, chairperson, the following slide is focusing basically now on the, just to give you a sense what happened in the last financial year, it ended 31st March 2014. And this is just to give you a breakdown of how the different provinces would have benefited from that particular allocation. As I said, there's a continuous strive to try balancing out the spread across the different categories of applicants, but also in terms of the provinces. And this is kind of the breakdown that you would see there. What we started to do, you see the national one is where we basically started to pull it out, because historically what happened, the national allocations, because federations apply, but remember a lot of the federations offices will be maybe in Cape Town or sorry, let's say Gauteng, but so it a little bit skewed our statistics. So when you see national, then it means that that particular project is basically not limited to a specific province. For example, if you fund the National Federation for Administration, obviously that funds are used to service the country as total. So you can't limit it to a particular province itself. So whilst the organization might be based in Gauteng, but obviously its members is sitting across South Africa. So that is just the kind of a keep a sense of that. Now, Chairperson, I've talked a lot about the different categories of applicants. My apologies, somehow the amounts didn't come out there in terms of just how that 483 was then split across these main categories, what we call sectors, actually sub-sectors in the sports and recreation. You could see then the national federations were one of the biggest categories of that benefited. Then obviously you've got clubs in the NGOs, obviously refer to some organizations that's just doing recreational activities as such. So we just lump that together, and then schools benefited about 25% as one of the other major beneficiaries of that. Chairperson, one could maybe do is in hindsight, because if I give you now the breakdown, for example, of the national federations, but we got the amounts and I said we could provide that, you would also find that part of the approach of the agency is that with national federations, they allow them to apply, for example, where they can do multi-year allocations. So under, for example, debt allocation of the last financial year, you might see that, let's say, a table tennis is not there or so forth. But if you go back to 2012-13, you would then see table tennis have got an amount actually that was given for a three-year period. And that's why I'm saying in hindsight, maybe one should provide to the committee maybe a table over the last 3 years. SASCOP there looks very small with 4%, but I got the figures, for example, if you look at the previous year, they would have received in excess of 100 million, and that money is still being paid in tranches. So although maybe in this financial year, sorry, the previous financial year, they only received 17.7 million as new allocations, but they had projects running, multi-year projects running, from say 2012 or 2013 or 12, even 2011 in some cases, because I remember it was a big allocation that was made in 2012 or 11 for a three-year period. And so you would find it, for example, as from say 2008, the total allocation to SASCOP could be approximately very close to 500 million in total. And also what needs to be remembered that sometimes a lot of the applications are obviously about benefiting, let's say, across the different coasts. For example, they would have received funds for high performance, or they would have received funds to establish a national training center, which would then benefit all the coasts in total. Chairperson, then part of the what the agency is also starting to look as part of alignment to government national priorities. We have also started to look now and check the trends of how much of the money that basically spent is going towards infrastructure. And for the last financial year, it's amounted to about 26% there. So that's part of what we're trying to build in the information we are gathering, so that when you remember the slide that the CEO presented, that part of the strategic intent is to align our funding also to government's national priorities. So in the sports sector specifically, we are starting to look actually and trying to track the spend on infrastructure. I'll give over to the CEO just to conclude for the last couple of slides. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I will not waste your time. Just quickly, in one of the slides, there was an indication that the sports distributing agency had done all the work, so they don't have any projects that they are adjudicating at the moment. Within a week, we should be going out on a call to invite different organizations to apply for funding for this current financial year. And that it will be a targeted call which incorporates elements of the National Development Plan as we indicated. Education and awareness workshops will be conducted with more focus in the provinces with low numbers of applications. And as part of ensuring that South Africans have access to our funding, we in the process through the direction of our board are establishing offices. We, before the end of the financial year, we should be having offices in the Free State, Northern Cape. We have an office which is operational already in the Western Cape. We're opening an office in KZN in the Northwest Province and Mpumalanga. We're hoping that honorable members and the chair will also have an opportunity whenever there's anything that they require in terms of the work that the NLB does to contact our office here so that they can get whatever information that they need. The challenges that we are having at the moment is that the demand for funding really exceeds available resources. We've been trying very hard to influence the chairperson and the board that as they are going through the licensing process, they should make sure that they maximize that percentage we should actually be paid into the lotteries board so that we can be able to distribute more. We'll see what the outcome of the process will be. And that our applications are based on a particular funding model. And for now, we lack what we can use as a tool to to really measure the impact. I said we are conducting a study. We're hoping that at the end of that process, we'll be able to go further into the process to really work on something that will ensure that every time money is allocated to a beneficiary, we're sure that there's going to be an impact and that impact can be measured. And expectations of recurrent and permanent funding is creating a situation for us. Hence, you'll hear from time to time organizations complaining that they're closing down because the National Lottery Board hasn't allocated funding. It's because other organizations do not just work on a sustainable funding model, and they just relying on what the National Lottery Board has to provide their funding to their activities. And that we are currently experiencing a very high rate of declines of applications, and that is mainly due to applications that are not compliant. Mr. Dupree earlier on spoke about compliance issues, issues pertaining to financial statements or mandatory documents that have not been submitted with applications, and those are the issues that result in the high rate of decline. It's something that for us is not very good because in the process it means lots of people who have brilliant ideas or projects or concepts are not able to access funding, but we are continuing to improve to make sure that we actually meet those people halfway. We've also had a big challenge with fraudulent applications. I think in the previous financial year, we intercepted something in the region of 300 million that would have been paid to organizations that do not exist or that were fraudulent. But the good thing is that through our processes internally, we managed to intercept that even before the money could be paid. So we dealt with that. At least we can comfortably say that nothing went out of that 300 million. And then we went back also to reinforce other areas of our funding processes so that we could conduct a thorough verification process before any money can be released. That has also created some kind of delay in terms of making sure that we funding projects in a reasonable time. The provisional, the provincial allocation spread for the first time since inception of the Lotteries Board, we have a 5% percentage which is regulated that we have to distribute to all the provinces. We've been battling to distribute 5% across all the provinces, but for this current financial year, we'll be reporting, the previous financial year, we'll be reporting that for the first time we've managed to allocate 5% to every province, and the auditors have been busy with that. It's something that we're very happy about because it's how we had promised to deliver to South Africans. And there would have been a motive publicized threat of downsizing operations and services or closure because of NSDCF not allocating grants. Whenever we have that problem, I've mentioned already that some organizations are not working on good sustainable mechanisms, and they rely on the NLB funding. So because the NLB funding is application-based, when you have received money this year, it doesn't give you guarantee that next year, automatically, your application will be approved. It will be about all the other projects that have to be considered. It's a reputational issue that we are dealing with, and we're trying very hard to educate our beneficiaries and to try and help them on many other ideas on how they can sustain themselves. Due to the amount or the number of applications that we've been receiving, we went out to the public to educate the public and to encourage the public to apply for funding. But we ended up with a serious challenge of not meeting, you know, reasonable turnaround times to an extent that there would have been a lot of complaints. But we've dealt with that, and hence you'll see that for the 2012 call, it's only now in 2014 that we managed to finish all the 7,000 applications that we have received, and we are going into a process of advertising again so that people can apply for funding. And lastly, Chairperson and honorable members, we appreciate the opportunity to account and to engage, and we hope that with the little time we have, we'll be able to respond to all your questions. We're hopeful that the imminent amendments to the Lotteries Act will address most of the fundamental structural impediments for the more effective and efficient distribution of funds from the NLDTF. We're particularly looking at those disadvantaged or rural areas, that they're the ones who are going to benefit from this, and that in the meantime, the NLV and distributing agencies continuously endeavor to improve the operational efficiency related to the NLVTF activities. And just lastly, that we didn't have a way of bringing photos or pictures to this committee, but would like to show you some of the projects that we have funded and what impact the money would have had in the lives of those people. And here's another one, Gindi Kindi Primary School. You can see the children there. And sports gear. And in terms of infrastructure, these are some of the facilities that we would have funded. I have no doubt that the Chairperson and honorable members also know about our proud project, which was the 2010 Legacy FIFA project, where we funded a lot of artificial turf to the tune of 117 million. And those artificial turf are mostly in very remote areas. We've been on a project with the Chairperson to go around to make sure that those facilities are handed over to municipalities so that they can be taken care of and they don't end up just destroyed. So some of them will be here. And thank you, Chair. Honorable
Okay.
Maybe the last thing that I can request honorable members to try to make sure that when they go for constituency works, they must try to look where our projects are. We have signed a memorandum of understanding with House of Traditional Leaders, SALGA, the Black Lawyers Association, and even the Chartered Accountants of South Africa, in order to make sure that the applicants know the responsibility of receiving the public funds. But as the CEO indicated, because we are now 50 years old, there are people outside there who have mastered how we work. You find people going in the name of National Lottery, organizing people to apply funds. They even sell the forms in order to get either 10%. We are getting reports that, more especially if you have seen that schools normally we give them 100,000. What consultants do is that they assist the school to apply, and when the money comes, and it's a call that we're making to all principals, some of them, they don't even, the money does not even go to the school's account. They go to consultants' account. And it is the consultants that can decide how much I give you. There was a case that was reported that, lucky enough, it was from the area far from where I come from, where the school got 100,000 and the consultant charged 50,000. I think media also exposed a certain school where our board was still there, but there's no ground, just funded by National Lottery. But the ground is empty, the principal has resigned, the consultant has run away. So we are, I think we are facing this challenge, because people out there mastered how we operate. Some of them are registering NGOs or NPOs. They are not for the community. They are for themselves. If you check the money that we distribute, 2 billion per annum, hopefully, ever since we started distributing this money, South Africans should be not where they are today. We should have been having sport facilities all over. Imagine if in 2010 we distributed 170 million and we were able to build 27 artificial turfs around the country. So if the money that we are giving were to be used like that, our kids could have had the chance to compete, to swim in a decent swimming pool, you know, playing soccer in a very well-kept soccer field. So that's the challenge that we are having. Yes, alone we can't eliminate that fraud. It means it must be it must be a collective work. Once you hear something from the area, please let us know so that we can follow those perpetrators who are using the funds in an appropriate manner. We have discussed with the committee, the distributing agency chair, that this year, this financial year, we must concentrate on school sports, because we believe that there is an earth talent that is found there. And I think with this call, many schools or many areas will be able to apply. And we are also trying to create the online channel, so that if there are organizations that can use internet, they can use internet. Although it cannot be this year, but I think that's from next year we are going to start with that channel. We are also negotiating with post offices and other agencies wherein our people can access the forms. We are negotiating with DTI that the form, because it has been a stumbling block to the majority of rural areas, is a difficult form. Let's make a form a user-friendly form. If somebody only wants 100,000, you cannot subject that person to fill a form like the SASCO or a federation. Those have got capacity. But rural, you know, people needs to get a form similar to the grant that they are applying, so that even adjudication can be easier. I think you should.
Thank you so much, but you know what? You've put conscience on front of us that by 12 you need to leave. As I'm sitting here, I'm suspecting that I'm having 20 questions I don't know about my colleagues. First and foremost, let's take this opportunity to thank you. We have the information that we've been needing. As I'm sitting here, I was even thinking that being a chairperson of sport, they are thinking that I'm a lottery or SASCO. The very first week, not in my area only, the cause that I've got something I'm suspecting is not going well. Like, I don't know, I'm from Eastern Cape, I don't know the offices where these people I can refer them. As I'm sitting here, I'm having a pile of brown envelopes from the principals who are very, from rural areas, who are needing these facilities. As I'm sitting here, I was thinking each and every member has gotten constituents. I'd love to ask in order that no one must think that this committee is corrupt being members of sport. In the first day that we did get a briefing, the motto of this committee is saying transformation where rural areas. We're not saying that urban areas must be forgotten, but we've seen that everything is going to urban areas. As I'm sitting here, I'm sorry that there's nothing that I can refer on your good work that you have done. You are saying province number one, Banyos, got this. But if you can say that, which area in those provinces, even your good self will be feeling that a minimum that has happened in the rural areas. So, who are the members of parliament who are looking up to the interest of each and every community, especially rural areas. As I was saying when I'm opening, I've seen the presentation of your on the 18th of February. I was interested that I'll hear you saying, maybe because there's so many things which are very important that you have presented, I was thinking that I'll hear you saying that, honorable members, go and check in your areas where the facilities are there and tell us what must we do if we got what now my office need to be a strong room of request from different rural areas. I've said to you, my honorable board, that I've seen that through your allocation, you have a balance remaining as the 31st, 12th, 2015 of this 162 million or whatever. I would love to hear you saying that it's no longer like this and we have this balance. And I'll be happy that you can even talk the advices to the committee. We're here presenting those people who are suffering that you have noticed even yourself, that people on the rural areas, they don't have information. You mention your municipalities. I'm from OR district municipality. I can tell you what are the people saying, not only in OR, but in the Eastern Cape at large. So I'm saying to you, I was worried when you saying this in the page, there's no page in your slide, report on current funding programs. Hey man, you can't take gold to people who are digging gold. Tell me, why are you having 50% in Gauteng? After these small and poor areas that are having 7 tons, maybe it's the way that they are doing things, but I've noticed that. So, Dad, don't feel offended because you must fight with us, or not fight, you must be with us. And the another question is saying that, where do they account about this allocation that you have given? Are they able to account, and maybe who's responsible for these funds? Is it municipality? Is it the sport and recreation of provinces? Because we would love to hear what have they done about the Eastern Cape plus 7% or 7% against 50%. And then I've also noticed infrastructure investment report year ending 31st March 2014 unaudited. That's our oversight. Say something more. What does this mean to us as a committee? And then the next call of application, hey Mano, why this province has very few that you open offices? But one other thing that I've noticed since we came in the office, netball doesn't have offices. The very same people that we are calling Boxing South Africa, they don't have offices. Tell us, what can you do, or what can you assist on that? I'm suspecting that I can't have time to ask this question. I take this advantage. I'm still having more questions, but let me give it to my honorable members. Thank you so much.
Let me start. One, Mr. Bachman. Two, Mudati. Three, Mutege. Four, Muti. Five, Mamutomo. Six, the young lady in the committee. Seven, Rawatan. All of them, they want to say something. This is a very important comment. I'm appreciating
to have these members, because I know sport is in their heart, because without sport you cannot have unity. Without sport you cannot have anything in the country. But unfortunately, we are the last to be given big stake. We'll make it happen. This 22%, that even the amendment is saying nothing about sport. This is the time.
Thanks. You're very passionate and vocal, but you end up saying half the things that I want to say. you just chair the meeting and then we talk.
My apologies.
Chair, with regards to the presentation, I noticed two things. And in terms of what the NDP says, we've got to be careful that we always try and align to the NDP, which wants to deliver by 2030 some really great resources now. Our minister has a vision of introducing these multi-purpose courts, and I was actually impressed to see that you already have introduced multi-purpose courts. Now, the whole thing here is that we see that a school requests, and then you grant that request, and sometimes you actually help in delivering that request. How are we sharing that knowledge? So let's say a school in Limpopo doesn't know what a multi-purpose court is yet, because Johannesburg is the one that comes up with that concept. How do we try and assist other schools when they put in a budget of 100,000 rand, but it's only to cover football kids, and we say no, but hang on a second, we can deliver you a court, a whole lot of soccer balls, goalposts, and kids for X, Y, and Z. And why I say we've got to be careful with the NDP is that we've got to try and not centralise, you know, all the decision making to us, and that we leave out consultants, or we leave out local industry making money from the purchasing of, let's say, kits and what have you. But again, if there was central buying power, you know, so let's say Lotto itself could tender for all the soccer balls, all the soccer kits, all the goalposts, and because of the buying power, it was cheaper, there was less money asked, or it went through, let's say, SASCOC or one of the national confederations, that somewhere along the line there's equity in the distribution. Because again, I've seen some of the lots of tenders, people are asking for vans, people are asking for soccer kits. When you marry all these requests, they all seem to, you know, they're the same amount, but they're asking for different things. And when we want money for sports, the reason we want money for sports is to try and, you know, let's go to our objectives, to get people to participate, get people engaged, and even the playing field. So if you're at a school like St. John's or St. David's or St. Paul's, wherever the case may be, you've got access to kit, you've got access to premises, you've got access to facilities. If you're a student who is at a farm school, or you're under a tree, you don't have access challenge then is how do we get funding, or how do we assist with the funding? How do we make it that, that the funding goes to achieving the objectives of trying to level those playing fields? And I'd say the challenge is not just sitting there with us in this committee. The challenge also assists with the board on how they can assist in distributing money that would actually go to achieving those objectives.
Thanks, Chairperson. My query is based on two things. One was the reference to the 26% that's spent on sports infrastructure in terms of sports infrastructure investment. That in terms of the tracking, what the Lotteries Board has done is to see how many of the monies they have allocated went into sports infrastructure. But I think for me it represents a mismatch because, one, it will be key to find out how many applications were actually for sports infrastructure vis-a-vis what was allocated. Tying this together with, you know, the desperate call that to this committee has become very clear is that there's a desperate shortage of quality sports infrastructure, more particularly in more rural areas and much so less in urban places. So it will be key to have that disparity to see whether are we not making skewed allocations. If you want to encourage decent investment in sport infrastructure, why are we turning down the number of applications for this, if that's the case, or why are we having such a low turnout if the output of applications is high? But the other query is regarding the misuse or the role of consultants in this. I think for me, you know, there are certain things that could be mitigated and minimized if there are very strong internal measures in place. So for accountability and tracking funding, it will be interesting to see whether the Lotteries Board has considered with regard to the payment of money. If, you know, we have established that money goes to the benefit of consultants, which are individuals rather than to sporting fairs, then why are we paying money into the coffers of consultants? Isn't there a policy that guides that payments or grant allocations should be directly made to the organization? And there are very simplistic ways of establishing this through interactions with banks in verifying, because many of these would happen through the, I presume would happen through the adjudication process where you establish the credibility of the institution, their financial standing, you know, their relationship with the bank if they submit a particular bank account. So that will, in my view, eliminate many of these things that go back. And it also goes back to the question of the provincial offices that you've indicated that you'll be opening. Many of these would be a powerful tool that would help with applications. But then again, you know, if we are not using this to the benefit of the applicants, there will be a market for consultants, and that is why we end up with people who are enriching themselves, you know, throughout this process because they see the Lotteries Board as a potential cash cow. So we need to find ways with strict internal measures that close that vacuum for the role of consultants in there. And in fact, I think it should be forceful enough to say, you know, in applications it must be clear that it's from a school, and you can establish this through the adjudication process. You know, schools have governing bodies that should be actually motivating that. Many of these governing bodies, regardless of where the schools are, they've got, you know, often have capable people who can assist with that process. And I also think that sometimes with applications, these applications can be strenuous. You know, I know of a school that tried three times to comply, but simply because there wasn't an individual from the Lotteries Board who could take them through the initial step-to-step of the application, which forces them to do the easiest thing, which is to get a consultant, you know, to help them with the application. Then it becomes the benefit for the consultant. So I think we need, from the Lotteries Board, with limited capacities, we quite understand the difficulty, but I think, you know, there's scope to find ways of being more proactive in assisting potential applicants to ensure that that process itself is more legitimate and that money that gets out of the lottery to organizations and causes actually is for that. And lastly, to ensure that there's regular, and we didn't hear a lot about this, as to whether there's constant accountability in terms of money granted to organizations, federations, and, you know, what are the reporting lines? You know, what is the approach of the Lotteries Board in terms of money allocated? Are there monthly reports, and how do we check that those monthly reports are then legitimate? It's just not figures that are fuddled rather than, you know, quite concrete measures of where money was spent. Thank you. Chairperson Matthew. In 2012, in the slide about budget versus allocation, I see in 2012, it indicates that the budget allocation was 537 million, but the grant allocation was 523. I'm curious to learn what happened to the shortfall.
Thank you, Chair. My input will be more on the solutions than the questions. There are things that we need to address in order to produce a visible delivery and address a radical transformation. Number one will be let the funds be distributed to everyone around here so that we can help them in distribution, because we every Monday we are out there so we can help in distribution of forms and the procedures so that we can reduce the decline of applications. Number two, we are calling for the budget or allocation, that is rural by, that's what we are clear about. Rural and poor townships. And again, I'm also calling for the increment on the schools allocation. Why I'm saying that? Because, of course, in some schools where the facilities are, 100,000 is fine for kids and other things. But where everything should start, like there's nothing at all, 100,000 is nothing. And schools is where we have to put more concentration, because it's where everything starts. We have to develop from the young ones. The other thing is a question. How do you do follow-ups in terms of following the money allocated? What happened to it? Was it used the right way, 100%, and all that? In other words, I'm calling for monetary mechanisms to catch these thieves who are stealing this money. No, this is just a thief. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let me know. Okay. Okay. Yeah. But we need to catch these thieves so that they can be arrested. And then our sports movement have a way to go, because now they are blocking everything. It's a lot of money, 2 billion every year. Nothing we can see. We're running with all provinces. Lucky for me, I'm in Limpopo, I'm in Gauteng, I'm in Eastern Cape. So I can tell you what is happening where. And the honorable chair was correct. Around Eastern Cape, I've been there. There's nothing. In Limpopo rural areas, Kukunaland, there's nothing. You will find always few out of the whole province. So I'm asking myself, what is the money? I mean, the municipalities to everywhere and all that. What is happening to that money? What are the offices of sports in those municipal offices? What are they getting paid to if in the whole municipality there's no sports happening, but somebody is getting paid every month for any sports things? Thank you very much.
Thanks for the presentation, Chair, and to indicate that I'm glad that we at least have offices around the provinces established by Rotary. I've been you know, thinking about that and wondering as to why it's not happening. But I'm glad that if you haven't yet, then you still going to. But I would also want to check as to where in the Northwest would that office be established. Because Chairperson, like you indicated, that you know, for this era of transformation, anything that we I know in South Africa we have a tendency, if I may give an example, that you'd be taking a certain thing and say you put it in rural areas and build it or establish it in Rustenburg or establish it in Potterstroom or in Glasgow. And those are big towns, so it's of no use if you do that. I would just want to establish as to where to happen, but I'm glad it is happening. And Jefferson, they indicated in the presentation that they distribute equitably and expeditiously, so and I'm glad about that. But as a national figure, I have received, you know, quite numerous complaints of people who made, especially for schools, like out. I remember that at a certain point there was a school in Queenstown called Wigley's, that made an application. I've gone to the place, there is a school in Bonabora just next to Bonabora. There is absolutely nothing there. You know, it's just the dry area and barren, absolutely nothing. They've done that, they've made an application. They've got a school. I know quite a number of them from rural areas. And they will tell me that, look, we have an application, we provided everything, and nothing in response. You know, there's no decline, there's absolutely nothing. Now, you never know as to why that is happening, but I'm just raising it that it should be noted. Jefferson, the lottery was here in February, and they presented a report to us. I'll remember that at that time in February, they said the allocation was 463 million. The grant allocated was 3 million, and there were 18 million of withdrawals, if those figures are correct. But of course, where my interest lies is the 162 million that was said to be of a balance. I just want you to check and tell us if you'd allow me to let maybe the chairperson explain as to what actually happened to the 162 million balance, and then I'll then have some follow up questions at the later chair. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you very much. Some of the questions have already been touched on, but I think I already have some answers to those. When I looked at the funding program of 2012, comparing, say, Gauteng and Wazuna, that's where I come from. You know, the applications received from Gauteng were 642, Wazuna, that's about 592. And the amount received Wazuna has 7% and 50% is housing. And even if I, you know, Wazuna child in 2012 was the largest province as far as housing is only just, you know, something. And most of the areas in Wazuna child are rural. And so how it's given by whatever. When it comes to this 100,000 distribution to all schools, is this the application? If they haven't applied, they don't care to know the name. So only because they have applied. So really, now when it comes to workshops, are these workshops held in these areas because they've been asked for? Or where it just be a group or about, you know, conducting workshops in the area, or is it pay request by the committee? So that also is paid by employment. Because where I come from, only 5 workshops in the largest, one of the largest, provinces in the area. And I think that's what it is.
Honorable Manana.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not going to touch what Honorable Tomoe has touched already, because I had that question as well. I'm saying in a big province where there is a deep rural area, so you'll never even see one of those things. Since you are working with the House of Traditional Salgas and the Blood, the Black Laws Association, Chartered Accountants, we will always insist on the monitoring and evaluation. Since you are working with those people and those fragilants, they keep on, it's one of your challenges. But if maybe you can stick on the M&E, that's going to assist as well. That's my input. And our slogan is transformation, as you have heard everyone talking about this transformation thing, especially on the rural area. We are covering the whole country, but we are speaking on the rural areas as a committee. Those people who made applications, I just want to find out if you do acknowledge and like you having lots of declined applications, are you writing them back and ask and tell and then informing them that your application has been declined or not? Because if maybe you don't do that, like there is one province whom I ever met with them, sit down with them and ask them about these lottery things, they were telling me that since we have applied, lottery boards never responded to us. We're still waiting for a response, that they are taking our application or not. If it's declined, they have to know as well that the application is declined, so that they mustn't see they're saying, hey, we have applied, waiting for the irresponsible lottery board. And you also, I think this is, I can call it a report, because a report can speak about previous things which you are presenting them to us as in 2014. And the schools, the breakdown for the schools, since school, we are looking at the schools that is, they are the one who's the first start from the early child develop, early childhood. Maybe if we can just get the breakdown as well for the schools, which schools in the country or the province at least, I think I'll appreciate that. I cannot emphasize on what they've already said to my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Dr. Strike, we called him Dr. Strike. He's our elderly leader here, but because he strikes, striking at that.
No, when I've been covered, and I must echo the same sentiment that we appreciate your presentation. For me, really, it would be good if we can have the spread of the 22% between SASCOC, the federations, and the schools. To a certain extent, it would be useful if we can have a sense of the number of schools that have applied and those that we have approved. In a sense, if we can also know where, so that we can begin doing some kind of oversight, because our role here is to be in a position to can do oversight. I was happy with your presentation, where you show the spread, the provinces, where you show that the Eastern Cape, in terms of infrastructure, is more. It is that type of understanding that we want, so that we can begin asking correct questions. I mean, for us, the key thing really will be whoever that you give money, how are you sure that that money has done what it was intended for? So we are also interested, because I mean 22% is quite significant, and that is, we are trying to locate our room so that we can assist and ensure that people do not take us for granted. People do not make themselves rich. And I'm happy that somehow there is intervention, because I was going to push for that, because I think we can make more impact if we can be proactive, because by now we should know what are the problems in the country. State South Africa is there. I'm sure that they have started checking the number of infrastructure blocks that we have, so that we begin ensuring that we make a difference in the country, even if we can concentrate on rural and ensure that we also balance that with the disadvantaged area within the urban area, because there is still a huge gap even in the urban areas. So for me, I mean, it would be interesting to get a presentation around the new intervention, particularly around the proactive funding, and how you do monitoring. I was happy that you got people that were trying to put fraudulent applications, but if you are not going to change that quite urgently, I'm not sure whether you will be in terms of dealing with people that are conflicted, even within the distribution agency. I mean, even myself, if I would want to be rich, I would want to place myself to become one of the people that decides where does this thing go to. And that is why, I mean, even ourselves, certainly, but we need to be careful not to want to even become distributors of force. It might be easy that we are assisting, but from where I'm sitting, I wouldn't want to be part of that. So long we can be satisfied and we know key contact offices throughout the country, we have started doing that. So we must be satisfied with that. And then we'll get reports and do monitoring, effective monitoring. Because as soon as they say, Honorable Ralohoma, can you assist us or give us forms? I'm not sure whether with what I'm supposed to do monitoring on Federation, SASCO, to even do oversight on what you have given them, because I know that is why I got an interest in terms of the percentage that you give to SASCO, to SAFA. But we need to begin ensuring that you assist us by giving us, so that we can track the schools. We need to see why are the schools where there are problems not submitting the forms. How can we ensure that we become proactive? Either you become proactive, you go and do training for those schools so that they can do application. Because until we do so, I mean, consultants will make more money. But we thank you that at least you have given us one presentation. If you can do it the way I'm suggesting, it will be useful for us to begin thinking, because otherwise it won't be useful for us, because our work is to get focus on this 22% and say, no, we are satisfied that it is going where it's supposed to go, and influence that, no, maybe it needs to concentrate on the rural says the disadvantage is us getting some kind of representation, because it is true that we've got a serious problem. And it would have been useful if you are saying this is the impact that you have made over the past 15 years. But you are begging with that. You can't tell us what impact you have done. I mean, since you are coming into being after 1997. Because I think that for me, is what we need to track, you know, whether we are making an impact or not.
Thank you, Honorable. That is right. The last one, I must thank Lotari. Had played a big role on assisting to build of the 27 facilities that were built as part of the legacy program of 2010 FIFA World Cup. Who played a big role. So, irrespective of what we're saying, but we need to emphasize that once you still have this role, we are adding that we are doing well, but we can't not tell you where we are thinking that you can assist. So, as I'm sitting here, I know that about 24 more are supposed to be built in that project. And I'm suspecting there are those also who are not finished. It cannot be your responsibility, but you've played a role. And as I'm sitting here, I know that is a Rotary Stadium or whatever it is not finished. Yes. So I'm saying that we'll be the happiest members of Parliament that Usafa supposed to build about 52 regions. Now I'm saying that the 52 regions of Usafa must finish the project. But if you can assist on the outstanding project, try to look what is it and how can you assist. We are also these people that we are thinking that you can assist. Now is the time that we nearly take your time, but it's because of your input. It was so interesting. Can you give us your response?
Thank you, Jefferson, and honorable members. Well, I think I am available to come to your study groups to tell you how we operate, because what I see and hear is that very soon we can be a social development. We are not a social development. We don't come to Parliament to receive a budget. We make a budget outside. In other words, we collect the money from the lottery operator, and we make sure that we divulge what we have collected. We don't eat any money that we collect. We come to Parliament and say, we have received 1.7 billion, and because this thing is an industry that can stop one day, this is how we are investing the money. For example, what we are collecting now, we are not distributing. We are investing it so that when we start the next financial year, we are taking that which we invested, because we don't have any other stream that brings money. It is only one stream of regulating, and the current operator, we are taking 34% of the sales, every sale. Now, honorable members, chair, the problem started with the Act. The Act says it is application based. I hope our members understand. It is application based. If I do something outside the application based, you can look me. Even if I see a person die of heart attack, and I say, by the way, there's a lot of money in the lottery, let's help that person. The auditor general locks me. What I impact, that's why there is a 5% miscellaneous. So that the only way I can do, if I see in Limpopo or Eastern Cape, that you, they are my schools, what I can do is to tell organizations that are truly registered, because that's what the lawmakers say. Organizations that have got financial statements, that's what the lawmakers say. If the lawmakers had created an act that says, we know where South Africa comes from, there was those who have and they have not. Because, say for example, I go to KwaZulu-Natal no more. What can I expect a school in Nongoma to have an audited financial statement? We asked that which, remember it was 1997 when we came, when lawmakers came with this act. It is relegated the mass of the people outside. Those organizations that were receiving funds from overseas and here in South Africa because of their financials, their registration, they continue to benefit at the expense of those whose lives should have been bettered by now. That also addressed the question that I think members alluded to. Why there are so many declines? We have tried by all means to allow people to come to our offices. We went to all the provinces to tell them this is how you fill the form. We even allowed the help desks to say when it is spot call now. The help desk will go to KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, so that those people who want to apply, they come to the help desk to say, here is my form. How can I fill it? Then the person takes them through the whole form and teaches them how to make a budget. But still, some people submit their applications on the last day of the call. For example, last year, the call closed on the 18th of April, and I saw somebody, in fact, who were having an interview. I saw somebody having a form, an envelope, sending it in. The following day, that person was asking me, how far? Remember, the call ran for 3 months. The person said, how far? I said, the application is still to be processed so that we know whether it is an authentic application and whatever. Another member asked the issue of response. When you hand in the application, if there is a number of your phone in the application, you get the response 5 minutes before you get into your car. Who says you have submitted your application on this date, the reference number is this one. When your application is adjudicated, before the adjudication committee leaves the room, the SMS indicates to you your application has been adjudicated. problem with our people, and I'm telling the truth, the problem with our people, they don't respond in time. We send grant agreements, because if you were to have to leave the home and start allocating money, no, we can do it in a week.
You know why? Just tell me. I once served in the committee where there are forms that people must apply for fishers license. Where even as the whole committee went to the place here in Cape Town, we couldn't even, as member of parliament, who were just not known how to fill this form. Our forms are not simple. And people, they will go from pillar to post wanting an assistant. We have taken a decision then, said, let's go to this office. You know, when we came back, sit down, while I was in the office, no one can fill that form. They are not simple, and that's why I'm saying I was calling my conduct advisor in order that I must not misrepresent the committee, saying that can we have an opportunity to see the format of the form and how are the questions, let alone of distributing. I'm telling, because of what you're saying, people on the last minute will be rushing with the forms, and the forms, they were not filled correctly. So I'm suspecting that in order that we must do it justice, we need to see what kind and type of form, especially that in our offices from different provinces, we don't even know these offices, but because now we're in the committee, we'll assist maybe to check within our provinces. But first and foremost, if we can have availability of these forms in order that when we're doing a constituency, we must assist, maybe do workshops in our constituents to tell them how to fill it. Thank you. I'm sorry about this.
The CEO will identify some of the things. The form, the problem with the form, Chairperson, it is again the lawmaker that says it must be a gazetted form. You can't change it. Even myself in the National Lottery, I can't change it. So it's something which Parliament must change. Now with the new act, if you amend it, I think you know better, you know the process better than myself. The new act that is coming into place, it categorizes the grants. So it can't be a one form suited to all the grants. There must be a form which is very simple and straightforward for people to can access the funds very quickly. This knowledge, how do we share this knowledge? We do go to provinces and conduct workshops and call all the organizations to come to receive the knowledge free of charge. Well, we don't want to act like we're centralizing the business. We have opened a province in Limpopo, an office in Limpopo. We have opened an office in Eastern Cape. I think it's East London. They are going to change it. Remember, sometimes when you open an office, it must be accessible. It's either electronically, you have to check all forms of everything. And what I do normally, I consult the government of that province to say, do you have any, not especially premiers, do you have any area that you think we can establish an office? I'm telling you, we do know that premiers say, okay, the office can be in this area. For example, we went to Free State, we were given so many areas so that we can choose. We went to Northern Cape, we were given so many areas. Here in Cape Town, the reason why we started, there is an office next to Parliament here. We have an office that opened. Was it here? It's a temporary office. We came here to, we were distributing, I think, 200 and something million for the organizations. The minister was there, and the deputy minister of foreign affairs also attended. It was on the eve of SONA, the first SONA before the current regime. We, at that day, we felt we cannot go home without telling our people where they can contact us. Next to the hotel, there's a big hotel here, Cape Sun. At the corner there, there's a tall building, whether it is a bank, West Bank. We are having an office that is open daily. We are opening an office in KwaZulu-Natal. The SG, the senior grant funding, is working on it. I think all quotations have been submitted. So every province will be having an office. The other, I think I agree with the honorable member. We took an idea that when we make a call, because the Indunas and the chiefs and whatever, they are very close to the people. In their areas, we are going to distribute the forms there so that people can come and collect them. That's why we also entered into an agreement with SALGA so that we can use their municipal offices to distribute the forms. And members can go. And in fact, I think honorable member knows that last year, was it this year, we agreed with the notion that even in the provincial, what's called the constituency offices, as long as we are not going to be criticized for being partisan, we are ready to bring the forms so that if people access that office, they can come and collect the forms. So we are on record to do that. We want to change the lives of our people. How many went to infrastructure? I think honorable member asked that such a question. The problem is that because we are application based, we try, but in the call, we try to indicate areas where we can, where people can apply. In other words, what content can be in the application form. Sometimes, if we say infrastructure, the school may not be in the position to say we want an infrastructure. They will say no, we want a kit, we want a playground and the like. So we are not allowed to force them. We are not allowed to change their application. What we have applied, according to the criteria mentioned in the advert, the distributing agency adjudicate according to what you have applied. The CEO is part to me that maybe either this week or next week, members should be given a booklet. There is a booklet that shows all the projects that we funded from the year 2000 until last year. You will read in sport, these are the federations. Some of them you will see every year they are getting funds. Some of them maybe they got once, but they never came back and the like. So the MLB Honorable Members is also embarking on, we agreed with our minister, is embarking on calculating the infrastructure that we have. The problem is our people, after getting the money, they don't want to show you that they got it from lottery, including our bigger federations. Now, our people are in Glasgow. Have you seen any logo of NLDDF? No. We funded them.
It's a policy. I think maybe my question was misunderstood. My question on the allocated funds for sports infrastructure was, given that the figure in the text here is 26%, what is the figure vis-a-vis the applications for sports infrastructure, not what was changed, so that we can be able to tell that that 26% was drawn from an amount of whatever the figure may be?
I think officials will explain. So what I'm saying is that there are so many things that we did in this country, but it is not known. Behind Parliament here, there is an organization called Iziko Museum. If you calculate how much we have invested in that organization, but sometimes when you look at the site, you won't even know that it has been funded by lotus. What I'm saying is that honorable members must help us to say, at least let us be honest. If you have received 20 rand from another corporate company and you received 30 million from lotus, which one is bigger than 20 rand? And it is the case with our federations. I'm worried because they don't even recognize and report. If you go to Britain, there was an Olympic somewhere, I think 3 years ago, September. They will upfront say, lottery is funding this tournament. Here in South Africa, we are not organized. By now, we have given SASCOC more than 600 million ever since the lottery started operating. It could be more than that. So these are the people that must come and account to our honorable members to say, this is how we're using the money and the like.
Honorable members, you know what they are telling us, that's why we've called to hear. And that's why these members are saying that this federation, we need to call them. And irrespective of that, now some have written letters saying that they will come in September. Without us having facts as we are giving it, we cannot say, why are you not doing ABC? Because first and foremost, we must be armed with the information. So every now and then when we're asking, I've heard when you started, in a way I felt maybe you said you are not accounting to us, we are not reporting us, it's DTI and whatever. But we were thinking that this committee, you have to come to this committee, because what we are doing, we need to know in order that we must do a follow-up and assist you. So you must take us as if we are accounting to us, because information is the power. Without information, we are not going to know anything. So think twice what you said when you opened this meeting. Thank you.
Sorry, I might have said it in the manner that you felt, maybe. I'm not saying we report to Parliament. What I was saying, I was I was saying, sometimes if you find us perhaps not coming immediately, DPI might be pressing on us, because in terms of what's called the plan, they will say your report on this date and this date. And in fact, when we receive your invitation, chair, we'll also share with the DPI, so that they mustn't, it mustn't look like we are not informing them. So you know, we are going to Parliament, to account, to arts, to account, to that thing. I think we are ready. Why are you paying money into wrong accounts? The problem, honorable member, is that even our people are easy to be robbed. I'm seated with a problem wherein somebody helped an organization to apply, and the personal contacts are not for that organization, but for that person who assisted them. And when we found it, in fact, there were some problems in the application, and we ended it to law enforcement. When they were searching, they realized this person is not even a board member of that organization. So sometimes we work on the information that is at hand, but we verify. Once we verify, that is when a lot of you will be given phones to say lottery is not paying, because we are still verifying. You have given us wrong information. We want to satisfy ourselves before we pay, because we verify before we adjudicate. After adjudication, we verify again, because I think members know that last year there was a story that somebody robbed lottery 4 million. It was in the newspaper. The problem was the information that came to lottery. We followed the information as is, but immediately when the application was adjudicated, they had a meeting, or the owner decided to track all the members from their registration. So that's what I'm saying. The public outside there, they know the mechanism of accessing the funds. Constant accountability. Yes, organizations are sending progress reports every time. If we approve 2 million, we indicate to you 2 million will be paid in three tranches. The second tranche will be paid based on the progress report. If the progress report is not satisfactory, we send our compliance to go and check the invoices and everything. Forms, yes, I've alluded to that one. It's a difficult form. We want to change the form, and it will be upon lawmakers to agree with us that there must be. In fact, if I were to submit something, I would say, let us not legislate a form. The form must be so easy that it can be written by the language that the people can understand. If I'm in Zululand, I must make sure that the form speaks Zulu, because we want everybody, even the old age, to fill in the form. Offices have responded to, where is the 160 million? The sport and recreation adjudicated everything, and on the last day of March 2014, this thing does not always occur. They must stop adjudication 10 days before the financial year ends, and the money must go back to the pool. But with the sports and recreation, I agreed with them that they must meet even the last day. They distributed the money. In Eastern Cape, I think there is a very big project that they funded. I think it is at the region of 20 or 28 million. But the office is still verifying, because some of the documents, they have to be credible. In Northern Cape, they also funded a project which is more than 20 million. In Limpopo, I think it was less than 10 million. In Gauteng or KwaZulu-Natal, I think it was close to 14 or 15 million. In Gauteng, I can't remember, but there were projects that were adjudicated on the last day. The problem is that our people submit incomplete documents. Sometimes you find financials, when the regulation says audited financial statements, you find financials are fraudulent. Somebody just signed them to say, I'm a financial accountant. When you look at the database of the registered officials, the person is not there, or other departments have already blacklisted that company. So you can see it's either we must influence fraudulent activities or not.
I'm suspecting that you still want others to give the answers or to do even, can I say, they must add on. So I'm suspecting that now they are taking even their time, but we are good. We are like my DJ. One other day I said, DJ, when you're speaking, your delegation said nothing. You flew with them from Pretoria, and he said, no, they've agreed that I must present, unless you are saying that they are not going to add. So we didn't raise all our questions, because I did get an indication that we want to be out at 12. But I've seen that this Mbogodo wanted to add, so try to sum up whatever answers you want to give to us. If they are still
now, the officials will remain with you. It's only me who must go and chair the committee.
No one did tell me that. That's why we are still doing this.
I'm saying they can answer some of the persons, but I was interested in clarifying the notion, saying that water is not paying. Some people come with that information and they hand it to us, whereas they submitted on the last day. And our slogan is first come, first in. The person who waited for 3 months to submit on the last day will be adjudicated on the last day. And that's the norm that we are applying. So
they can also help.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm suspecting that everyone is taking what you're supposed to do. It was just valuable answers that will help the committee. Let alone that they didn't tell us that that's 12 because for you. So that's why they were saying time. So we've asked when the people coming to the committee that we have the whole day with whoever we've called. One other time there were some others saying that we're rushing to to first flight, have indicated that when we invited stakeholders, we need to have them 10:30 or 10 to 1 o'clock at least. So when now I was sitting here, I was told that by 12 o'clock we need to be released. So I'm not harassing you because your information is very valuable. Any other visitor want to say something to us?
Thank you, Chair, and Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. I think our Chairperson has dealt with most of the issues, except for just two things that I would like to emphasize. I think my colleague Jeffrey will talk to the 26% issue. I think that needs clarity. But I wanted to say we are required by legislation as well to publish information on an annual basis on all the projects that we have funded. So this information that you have been asking for, we will send to you, but as the chairperson indicated, you know, we were supposed to have brought you a book that has documented all those projects from 2000 until now. So in that book, we realized that we wouldn't be having the current one. The audit, I think, is only being completed on Wednesday. Secondly, in terms of we have pre-adjudication processes, adjudication processes, and we are fully automated in the organization. So hence, upon submitting your application, there will be an SMS sent to the applicant, and at every stage they get given information on what is happening. So we have like an audit trail, and this is done through a computerized system. The only time when we become manual is after adjudication, where we have to be processing payments, but even then, it also links to the system. I just wanted to say, in terms of monitoring and evaluation, we have a whole compliance unit, staffed by, you know, auditors and other people. They do pre-adjudication processes to establish whether those projects exist, you know, the verification that the chair alluded to, you know, to deal with fraudulent activities. And even for the project to be closed, after those reports have been sent, we have a whole team that goes out to go and make sure that that has happened. In most cases, they are not very successful. Sometimes we expose them to huge costs, but just wanted to say, in terms of monitoring and evaluation, we have separate special units that are staffed by people who are actually experts in that. And, you know, we thoroughly also audited by the AG, and even internally we have a very robust internal audit arrangement. The establishment of the Office of Interim Mufti, I hear you. I think that's one thing that I would like Jeffrey to talk about. In addition to the work that is done by the chairperson of the board to interact with the stakeholders on where offices should be established, we look at the, you know, they are always needs-based. So we look at when the population density, where we'd like to reach the people, and the issue of access. I agree with you, it would be nice, you know, to take offices like this to those other areas, but if an office has to be accessed by everybody in the province, I think there's an agreement that it has to be centrally based. The issue on early childhood development, charities sector last year just had a special project to fund ECD. We went on a stakeholder engagement where we went to all the provinces to literally distribute money to organizations. And our 60% of that money in the previous financial year from charity went to ECD. It was a special project that they would have adopted. And an important thing that we didn't mention in the committee as well is that as we go through the process of developing a strategy and what's forming funding and applications for calls, you know, we have DGs of the different entities sitting with us in those sessions so that we can look at their priority and match them with ours. So even with sports, whatever, most of the things that you see here would have been informed by the parents also that they presented to us. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next person.
Thank you, Chef. Just on the issue of the 26% spend, I think the first part of the question, I think it's obviously a comment, and I think it's a valuable input just in terms of presentation of the information. However, as the chairperson has said, one of the impediments is that you basically respond to what has been asked for. And so the allocation is then the outcome of both what has been asked for, but also if you look at that couple of slides that I've had on the different things that people can apply for. And I think part of the challenge is also about having to make tough decisions. And I think in our interaction with the distributing agency, and I think that's part of what the board is trying to also in terms of the strategic plane, is to move a bit more to impact-based funding because, and the problem with, I call it a problem, but actually the challenge, it's a mindset thing. Because I think part of the problem, and I think it's something that all we have to grapple with, including those that make those decisions, at the end of the day, there's only so much that you can fund with 500 million. And at the end of the day, part of that decision is about tough choices. So for example, and I think one of the members also mentioned the issue of facilities and having decent facilities. Now, part of the trade-off is that if you want to move from 100,000, let's say, and you say my standard for a multi-purpose court, at the school is 500,000. It means that you basically have, the trade-off would be that you will fund less schools, but you most probably your impact will be bigger because you will have more something that actually you can clearly see the impact. Now you're going for a smaller amount. And I think that is part of the challenge that those that make that decision will have to face at some stage. And I mean, it applies to some of the other issues that is raised. For example, if the decision is, let's say, school sports, is a key priority for the sector. At the end of the day, from Department of Sports to National, whoever is involved, then they have to say, we have to deal with our stakeholders in those national federations and wherever, to say, over the next 3 years, we're going to fund, let's say 80% of our budget is going for schools. And part of the problem has always been, because of the closeness of the sector, and as I think the CEO alluded to, as chairperson, around the composition of those adjudicators. And that's why one of the things that CTI is suggesting now in the new act is that if you are becoming a distributing agent, you cannot be a member of any organization that can be a potential applicant. Because even the issue of conflict of interest, as the honorable member correctly has stated, is a problem. Because we all know recusal can go so much, so far. And I think I think the chairperson always says that, I mean, with recusal, you can just, I mean, before you get recused or even before you come to the meeting, you can have your focus whatever because next time is yours. So you can say basically, you know, today's netball, so please look up for me. I know rugby is coming or soccer is coming. So there is limitations in that regard. So even the Act is trying to strengthen that. But chairperson, my view in this regard is I think at the end of the day, it's about making, it's about more focus in how we allocate the funds. At the moment, I think we try to, I don't want to call by the face because it sounds like fraudulent, but it's about, you can't, in this, if you want to be more strategic in your funding, you can't have a too broad-based approach. And it doesn't say you will never fund other categories, but somehow you will have to say, for the next year or for the next 2 years, if I say my priority is school sport, you need to translate them back into your prioritization of what you do with your fund. Otherwise, it becomes a slogan or it becomes just a strategic intent. And I think that is part of the problem with the infrastructure because I know that that is one of the key focuses. But if you don't direct that, when, for example, if you put out a call, if you have a list of 10 things, and as the chairperson said, if you give a menu of 10 things, that applicant can decide I choose number 1 or number 5. You can't now when they submit and say, no, you're not supposed to apply for kids every year. Because that's what's happening. Because we are saying to schools and to clubs, you can apply for kids and whatever. I've seen some cases where you see year after year, or every second year, the same club is applying for kids because
You are limiting them also, because you are saying you can apply for kids. So what do? I apply for kids even if I don't need it, you know. And then some of us, we take it and we use it as pajamas or whatever. Because I was part of it. Well, you see your sister or the brother is using the tracksuit or whatever. So I think by the information about contextualizing, for example, now to say 26% out of harm, that is something that obviously that we will deal with, because we are currently also busy with the project with our information officer of creating space within the system to capture additional information so that we can, for example, contextualize to say, out of that, we actually received applications for so X number for infrastructure, and we funded X number of them. Just last, I just wanted to contextualize the issue of 50% on the report of current funding. This one is about the applications received, it's not the allocations itself. So in other words, what we were trying to illustrate here to you to say, this actually shows you already where our problem is starting. Because if you are receiving 4% applications from Northern Cape, and you're not even guaranteed that all of those are compliant, assuming you're receiving 500 or 300, the chances are well that 50% of that is not even making the table for adjudication. So you're already starting on the back foot, and that's why we've been struggling of achieving the allocation of 5%. And second point I wanted to make is what you would find most probably, because that 50%, that percentage is based on the value. So if you look at Gauteng, what pushed that number up most probably is because most of your national federations are sitting there. So it is a little bit of a skewed picture. So it's not about the number of applications, it's actually about the value. So your federations apply usually for more, for bigger amounts. Your clubs, you know, where you get most of your applications, you might get from small organizations in the Northern Cape or whatever. So that's a little bit what skewed this particular figure. So Jefferson, this is not, I just wanted to indicate that it's not 50% that has been allocated to housing, but it's actually the value of the application. So out of that 6 billion, 3 billion value of applications came from housing. Yes. So I just wanted to contextualize. And I think the CEO tried to explain, Honorable Member, the issue of the location of offices. It's always a heavy debate, and there's so many factors that you need to put into that. Number one, I think members would agree that you also got a limitation in terms of the amount of money that you can spend on, for example, operational costs. Because at the end of the day, I think the same committee would also say to us, but why are you using now so many of the money that needs to go to beneficiaries on, for example, running the organization? So part of the balance that you have to find is that if I'm allowed to only or can only afford one office in a province, like, for example, Northern Cape, so now you have to say, where is the best, how best can I serve that province? And unfortunately, you need to look at the issue of coverage, because, so it's about using it as a springboard. But what we said to the board when we presented the plan, we said as we move forward, we need to look at complementary ways of dealing with the legitimate concerns about location in urban areas versus rural areas. Part of that might be to say, having this partnership with the municipalities, the traditional leaders and so forth. So what we are looking at moving forward, you might then say, okay, my office is actually in Cape Town. But part of my model needs to say, I will go out to Worcester or somewhere, maybe as part of a visiting, you know, like Home Affairs have, you know, sometimes they will go out to an area and they will just service there. So that's part of what we're just thinking about to try. But the big problem for us as Chairperson is about how do you maximize your presence in terms of servicing that province. And it's about now, if you go, like what happened in Northern Cape, what we've done, we looked for that, but also you've got six or five districts. So we started to look at the distances even. You know, if I have to choose an office, be fair to the one sitting on the left side or the right side, what would be an amicable way of just getting somewhere so that you'll be able to give everybody a fair chance to get physical presence? But as I said, I think moving forward, the answer to that thing is about not just staying there, but in the way, how do you use your field offices? How do you use partnerships with other government agencies, departments, that you can use their facility, even if it's once a month, that the people knows in Tata that the lottery will be there for 3 days, and I know I can then come and deal and put my queries and so forth. So Jay, I thought just maybe that's a couple of days.
Thank you so much. I don't think we do need follow-ups
this is not the last time that they are visiting us, except that the explanation of 50% with me, I'm suspecting that, do you monitor how do they distribute that 50% rural versus. So those things one other day we need together to look at, because even if federations, they do have, they are calling their international in Gauteng, and then how did they distribute that 50%, because they don't have to look at national, they do have provinces and whatsoever. So that's why it was alarming to me. But with that spirit, saying that this monitoring is very important, especially as these members of this committee, we have noticed that this is very little to our rural areas. Facilities there, they are not there, and now that this the national federation was getting 50%, and we don't know how are they disputing that 50%. If it will remain something that is a gap between you and us, because this is not about them, this is about us. Lottery, the work that you are doing, you don't want to feed individuals, you want to promote this transformation even to the rural areas. We are not jealous of urban, because as I'm sitting here, even there in the where they are there at Glasgow, most of facilities and things made today, that we must be proud, because the majority of facilities, they are in Epe. We cannot rejoice and not to rejoice when they are doing well, because they also have a right to have facilities. But our plea, transformation is not there in our rural areas. So with your good self having monitoring facilities, if you do have, as you are saying, we need to monitor this money that we are popping in. Sometimes they are thinking that it's their money, but they are getting money from you, and then they are becoming popular. But you will call everyone to tell their good and bad stories in this community. With those words, honorable, those who want to say their last words, I won't talk again. I was thinking that I'm doing those remarks. I'm seeing the hand, three hands. Ngawo Musi, Nawe Dada, and then Nobody. Prof, you want to be excused?
Yeah.
Wait for these three follow-ups, Prof, if you don't mind.
I think from what I got from Honorable Joseph, he's honorable today. All right. Yeah, the issue of applying for kids all the time, I think it is caused by the amount that is allocated. And the other thing, we must remember now that since we said we are not saying lottery is not doing anything or somebody's not doing, but most of the money is used on one spot. So those 100,000 are going to one schools or one areas, which mostly is urban. If you can check, I'm not having figures with me, but if you can go through, it will be mostly urban areas. See, So I'm appealing again. Let us try to be rural biased, not negating that we have, but now we prioritize.
Where there's nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think there was an oversight. There was a question that I don't think it was answered. It was regarding the budget vis-a-vis the allocations of land in 2012. Where there's a figure of 537 that was the allocation, and that was the budgeted allocation. And then there's a figure of 523, which is the grant allocation, which creates a shortfall of 14 million. And then for 2014, which is unaudited, I won't get into that. I'm just curious about the audited one and what happens to the fund, were they transferable, and in which way were they transferable?
Maybe before Jeffrey answers, if the money is not used, it go back to the total pool and be distributed according to 45, 28, 22, and 5. So it doesn't go anywhere. It goes back to the pool. And some of the things, honorable member, is that some of the causes is that the distributing agency, because they are only coming twice per month, so they don't finish the budget. Some of them do finish the budget, like the person that came from honorable member, the sport and the recreation decided to work on the last cents of their budget before it goes back, because if it goes back to the pool, it doesn't belong to them. It belongs to all four sectors. The issue that I wanted to clarify, Chairperson, is that when people apply, that's why you see that 50%, when people submit raw applications, our office calculates the amount that they are requesting. Now, the amount that they are requesting does not translate the amount that they are going to get when it is being adjudicated. Somebody can apply 40 million, but get only 2 million, depending on the criteria for adjudication. So I think the presentation is giving you an information to say the way we are receiving applications. We are receiving applications of amount that we don't have. Like last year, the total amount for all the sectors came to 72 billion. When we have 42 billion. So then it means when that's why I might have said something in my speech sooner, and I think the intervention of the committees is giving us some new ideas. Sooner we can be regarded as a social the SASA of South Africa, because everybody who applies is either, you must say, 100, 100, 100, 100. It's no longer those who qualify and who not qualify, who doesn't qualify. But the input that comes from honorable members, I think they are making us to go and strategize, and also if we are to come back here, we'll come back and say, here we are, these are the presentations and departments. For example, the recreation department comes and tell us their policy and what they want to do this year. For example, last year they presented an integrated facilities, and the distribution agency is working towards the integrated facility, so that during this year they've already started talking to me to say we want to build at least one project in each province, so that when we finish the year we can point that we've got 9
words, let me take this opportunity to thank you to other people. They will be feeling that it was a grilling session. To me, it's an information session. We are empowered. Now we can, honorable members, now we can be invited in all those jolly things. When the South Africa was not in Brazil, there were people there thinking that we must go to Brazil. And then, on behalf of you members, I've said to do what? Now they're in Glasgow. No one has anything to say, committee or whoever must come. But I'm suspecting we're not going to say yes, because we want first empowerment before you invite us. We'd love to be invited to see what is this department is doing, or the times of relaxing and to sleep. But we're thinking that we want to have this session like this in order that we must know what is it in this new home. And we're hoping together we'll be trying to change those things which are not changeable. And we're not part of the last parliament when we are saying that the amending of the act, this 22 is remaining like that. We're hoping as we're sitting here as honorable members, when we're in our study group members, sometimes we must carry the mandate of committee, because the policies are formed in some other study groups, and we cannot always rejoice if sport still that far with the budget. If so, we are here to transform this department. With those words, thank you so much. It was very interesting. We are empowered. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.